Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Avatar of Light by Dmitry Bilic. Translated by Irene Woodhead and Neil P. Woodhead. Narrated by Bruce Mann. Chapter 1. Heroes in shining armour never embarrass themselves. I can't remember any that had normal human ailments or diseases. Things like toothache, diarrhea, and hemorrhoids give them a wide berth. Whatever problems they face are inevitably of the noble kind. If they get their arm lopped off, they'll be fighting with only one hand, doubling their righteous fury. If they receive a full burst of submachine gun fire, they'll soldier on, helping their wounded friends to safety. And even if they get a bullet in the gut, they'll make sure they smoke all their enemies before they lie down and croak. Judging by all of the above, I was nowhere near a hero. I was scared. I hurt so bad I wanted to wail with pain. Blood gushed out of my practically disemboweled belly. The hill was dusty. My wound might turn septic, I thought. Can you imagine? You'd think that was the least of my problems. Still, so far I'd managed to brave it, suppressing the desire to scream and sob in agony. It might sound funny, but the thing that gave me strength wasn't the thought of my helpless friends or even the knowledge of the threat looming over humanity. No, it was common pride, pure and simple. I just couldn't lose face in front of this jeering abomination of a god. And as for the Avatar, it had turned out to be a strange thing, really. Once I'd equipped it, the world seemed to have come into focus, as if I were a myopic patient given a pair of glasses. I could make out barely visible wisps of grey smoke snaking up over Arts, Hunter and Litius. And as for the darkest one, you couldn't see Jack next to him, so enveloped he was in his own smog. Apparently, a divine avatar allowed you to see other people's respective karmas. Funnily enough, Trog turned out to belong to the light side. His skin glowed like freshly driven snow in the sun in February. Appearances can indeed be deceptive. Okay, so I could see people's karmas. Fair enough. Was that it? Somehow, I didn't think a divine avatar could be so tight-fisted with its gifts. There had to be something else. Soon I found it. A few meagre lines at the very bottom of the interface. You've unblocked a divine avatar, Savior. Unlocking additional abilities requires 2,000 points of light karma. Current abilities, Righteous Fire. Deals 5,000 points of damage, ignoring any of your opponent's magic and or physical defences. Distance Weapon. Maximum range, 30 feet. Cooldown, 7 days. Transformation of Liquids. Allows the Avatar Bearer to transform any available liquid into any other of his or her choice. Close range ability requiring the user to touch the liquid containing vessel. Cooldown, 1 day. Resurrection. Allows the player to resurrect after a certain period of time. Cooldown, 30 days. Select the time and date of your next resurrection. I looked at the resurrection bar, which was currently at 0. That was interesting. Apparently, the ability arrived inactive. I inched the slider to the right. The first notch was marked 3 days. Excuse me? Why did it take so long? Never mind. The most important thing was I could resurrect, no matter how crazy it sounded. Good enough. Which meant that the coral had been right. I did indeed have a chance to make it. That also brought Janus' motives into focus. The Destroyer's avatar must have given him some kind of defense imber ability, while the Savior had the Righteous Fire and the Resurrection abilities, making him one of the most powerful gods, if not the most powerful. There was another thing in favor of him owning Savior. It would allow him to neutralize the Righteous Fire, which ignored the Destroyer God's defenses. Probably. I might have to try and check it out. Health, 13 out of 60. Health, 12 out of 60. The darkest one wasn't in a hurry to deal me a coup de grace. He was basking in the moment, talking non-stop. He probably hadn't seen any of those movies where villains talk too much instead of getting their act together. Very well, it looked like I might have to once again take control. I turned my head to Hunter and yelled, "Run!" My scream turned out truly blood-curdling, filled with desperate primal fear. No idea what my mentor must have read in my eyes, but he got the message. He didn't run, no, but he began to retreat fast, without turning his back to the Darkest One, who apparently didn't like it. The two-faced god shot up and darted toward me, and I was pretty sure he wasn't going to ask about my health. He needed the sword, which until now I'd managed to hold rather deftly in the wound with my stomach muscles, ignoring all the blood loss. Which was exactly what I counted on. As soon as his hand lay on the sword's hilt, I grabbed at both with my bloodied hand, losing 4 points of health in the process. My every movement was pure, unadulterated agony. But the thing was, I grabbed this two-timing bastard so hard he had no hope of dodging. Then I activated righteous fire. It was a terrible sight, I tell you. Under the gust of a fiery tornado, the god's skin turned black and flaky like paper. His facial muscles went up like sulphur thrown on a bonfire. What meagre layer of fat he'd had began to sizzle, boiling and evaporating. It happened fast, way too fast. Before he'd had chance to cry out, Two-Face turned into a skeleton consumed by flames. "You've killed a player who was hostile to you. A change in development branch available. Two-Face. In order to activate it, you need to select it as your new development branch within the next 24 hours. You've gained a divine avatar, Destroyer. You've gained the Lability skill. You've gained the Freeze spell. Your fame has increased to 4. Your reputation has changed to Badass. This god, this Superman, one of the greatest players in history, had been reduced to a charred skeleton, billowing thick clouds of steam and a sickly, rancid stench. Gradually the skeleton began to crumble apart, turning to ashes, which swiftly scattered in the wind. Unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to fully enjoy this nauseating scene. It all happened too quickly and with no poetic hoo-ha. One moment the world was there, then it was gone. It was as if someone had switched off the light and disabled all sounds and smells. Everything disappeared, me included. My body, my thoughts, my mind. The world had ceased to exist, and so had I. Before I'd even opened my eyes, I knew it smelled of my childhood. A mixture of the warm wool used to knit socks, and something old-fashioned but strangely pleasant, like the mothballs they used to keep in wardrobes. It brought back memories of mornings at my grandmother's whenever my parents left me at her place for the weekend. I'd wake up, run my hand over the woolly Turkman carpet hanging on the wall, then I'd stretch and finally get up. Mechanically, my fingers stretched out for its luxurious oriental beauty. I cringed. The wall was bare and cold, no sign of the carpet at all, which meant I wasn't 8 years old anymore, and this wasn't my grandma's place. Where was I then? I opened my eyes and took in my surroundings. I was in a small room with a bed, a tiny table, and a chair, dimly lit by a glass lantern with a winged fluorescent creature fluttering inside. I'd seen something like this before somewhere. A vaguely familiar beast man was sitting on the chair, his figure emanating a greyish whisper of smoke. I willed the divine avatar away from my face and looked at Lytius through my normal eyes.
Sergei, finally. Hunter did say you'd come round, but he didn't say when.
Calm down, Lytius. It's no good you rattling off like a machine gun. I sat up and ran my hand over the woolen blanket. That's where the disorienting smell was coming from. I had to think logically.
The last thing I remembered was us being in Purgator on our way to Veerhort. If the messages I'd received were to be believed, the darkest one, Janus the Two-Faced God, was now dead. My team had survived, however. Despite his wounded pride, Hunter had still been alive when I'd passed out, albeit slightly worse for wear, and judging by what he'd apparently told Lytius about me coming round, he was alive and kicking, which meant that we must have made it to Veerhort. Next. I couldn't speak for all of us, but I knew that Arts had only one friend here, the alchemist. Seeing as she'd gone to see him when she'd been wounded, it stood to reason that she must have beelined for him now as well, which meant that he'd taken us in. "Are we at Tartar's place?" I asked.
"How do you know?"
Lytius asked, so surprised that he'd even stopped stuttering. "You're not the only walking Pentium around here. I use my head occasionally, too. So this is his place, then. Excellent." We fell silent. I used the pause to look into myself and check out the goodies that Two-Face had left me. Divine Avatar, Destroyer. Activation requires under 1,000 points of karma. Now why didn't that surprise me? You can't sit on two chairs at once. You either need a very big backside or very strong furniture. Which wasn't exactly my case. Actually, hadn't the system offered me a change of development branch? I rummaged through my interface about as far as I could reach, but came up with nothing. Of course. Hadn't it said that I had 24 hours to change my decision, and I'd been lying flat on my back for a good 3 days? Very well, then. We were still the Time Master. Lability, agility. The increase in the body's natural manoeuvrability, as well as the speed of stimulation cycles in nervous and muscular tissues. It wasn't clear yet whether this ability was active or passive. Visually, nothing had changed. And physically? I definitely felt worse than I'd done before I died. If this was the result of their so-called lability, I'd rather have had it as it was. Freeze. Modification. Slows your opponent down 10% of their original speed. Range, 60 feet. Cost, 40 points of mana. Duration, 5 seconds. Can't be used more than once on the same target. Bah! I was pretty sure Two-Face must have had much stronger spells in his arsenal. What I'd got was garbage. Wait a sec. I just answered my own conundrum. All the other spells must have been way out of my league. At my current level, I simply couldn't use them. So they cut the coat according to the cloth, which meant I had to level up magic. The next time I came across another suicide case like him, I might get myself a nice spell for my troubles. I awoke from my reverie, noticing Lytius' mouth opening and closing. "Sorry, man, I got sidetracked. Could you repeat that, please? Where's everybody?"
"Arf is dead. Hunter killed him after Two-Face had taken control of his mind. At least, that's what Hunter told me."
"I know that. I saw it myself. And where are all the others?"
"I see. Arts is at the community governor's. Trorg is with Vifale, the commander of the Archelis 5th Legion."
"It's not really a good time to go socializing. Not when your comrade is teetering between life and death."
Lytius hesitated. "You don't understand. They're not socializing. They're prisoners."
"No way!" I jumped to my feet and immediately regretted it. Firstly, my muscles had apparently decided that seeing as I was officially dead, they were on strike. And secondly, the room wasn't quite cut out to accommodate an average human. A bit like Korean minibuses. My head promptly hit the ceiling, forcing me back into a sitting position. Tartar came running to check out the noise, followed by Bretta. The alchemist gave me a thorough check, a bit like a vet checks over a stray dog, nodding to himself all the while. He told me to stay seated and he'd be right back, then left again to delve deep into his lair. Bretta shuffled after him, bickering all the way.
In the meantime, I asked Lytius to tell me what had happened. It seems that the local chief had some kind of issue to settle with Arts. I immediately thought about the last time we'd been here, when we'd been forced to escape two of their goons. And the worst thing was, Lytius couldn't make it clear what the exact problem was. It looked like Arts owed something to the local community governor, although, according to her, he simply had the hots for her. It was all highly dubious, very much so. With Trog, it was just as bad. Apparently, in the brief time between our two visits, the Arcali had indeed summoned some griffins and ejected the Kabirids from the fortress. Now the town of Viahort, or rather the commonest part of it, was governed by one Vifail, the commander of the Arcali's 5th Legion. No idea what kind of guy he was. Not only had he had the cheek to enter the community grounds with his men, but he'd also had the audacity to arrest Trog and escort him away. According to Lytius, Trog was now imprisoned in the fort's dungeon, accused of smuggling angel's ashes, which was also something I'd never heard of until now. But the most surprising thing of all was Hunter's reaction. He seemed to have dropped my friends like a sack of rocks. Yes, you heard it right. Apparently my mentor had just shrugged, like shit happens, and then he just ported back home. He'd come back once every day, in the evening normally, to ask about me, then he'd leave straight away. So much for my dream team. Lytius was the only one who'd kept vigil over my nearly dead body. Bummer, I summed it up. Out of 6 of us who left for Purgator, 1 was killed, another 1 betrayed us, and 2 more were captured. I'm not much of a raid leader, am I? Oh, and by the way, Lytius offered me a handful of dust. What's that? That's all that Two-Face dropped. Nothing else. Hunter said that your fire had scorched his inventory with everything that was in it. Dust was the only thing that survived the blaze. I collected it. It was 206 grams. Together with what I already had, it made a total of 336 grams, enough for the remaining team to get back home. Now there was only one little problem left to solve, how to free my friends. It looked like Lytius and I would have to do it between the two of us. Apparently we couldn't pin our hopes on Hunter. Talking about whom? Listen, Lytius, what about the 200 grams of dust I paid off? Did he drop it when he died? He did. Hunter took all his stuff and the dust, too. He was the one who'd killed him, don't forget. Now I really wanted to see Hunter and give him a piece of my mind. He'd taken all the loot and the dust, told us to fend for ourselves, and just fled the coop. Don't get me wrong, I did appreciate his visiting me and asking about my health, but as for all the rest... I clambered to my feet and groaned in agony, feeling as if I was being disemboweled with a red-hot poker. I lifted the tatters of my sweater and gingerly touched the skin beneath. Jesus! You should have seen the scar! It was enormous, looking very much like a dry lump of mashed potato stuck to a clean plate. Not good. So much for their healing magic. I checked my health indicator with some apprehension. My health points bar was fine, but my feelings told a different story. My vigor was only half full and didn't show any inclination to rise any time soon. How weird. Where's the sword? I asked, just to distract myself from all the pain. Which sword? I wasn't in a state to suffer such sheer stupidity. Had Trog said that, I could have handled it, but Lytius? Excalibur, of course, the one King Arthur received from the Lady of the Lake. Lytius, put your brain in gear, please. Where's Grammar? He shrugged. It was destroyed by your fiery tornado. At least that's what Hunter said. I wouldn't say I was a pessimist, but now my mood had plummeted below zero. Gingerly, I took my first step after my resurrection, leaning against the bed's footboard. Apart from an unpleasant straining sensation in my belly, it was tolerable.
"Where do you think you're going?"
Tartar said, reappearing in the room.
"You need to stay in bed for at least another day. Here, take this."
"What is it?" I asked, fiddling with a vial filled with a purple liquid.
"It's exactly what you need right now. Drink it."
Before, the old man hadn't seemed to want to do me any harm. If you thought about it, he'd given me shelter and taken good care of me. In other words, he'd only been good to me. So I shrugged and emptied the vial in one swig. I wouldn't say it made me feel better, but my vigour started inching up slowly. Better than nothing. "Thanks a lot for your help, Tartar, but we need to be on our way." The alchemist shrugged.
"As you wish, although I recommend you stay in bed another 2 days."
"Sorry, but we really should be going." I smiled and made to leave the room, but couldn't, because the short alchemist didn't budge, blocking my way.
"Something else?"
I asked, looking at him in surprise.
"Nothing, really."
He dismissed my question with the smile of an old friend.
"Just a little payment for my services."
"Your services?"
"It's 90 grams, 30 for the elixir, and another 60 for the room. 20 grams a day." What an old miser! At first I didn't even know what to say, but once I'd calmed down, I even admired his cheek. The man could squeeze water out of stone. $300 for some chemically coloured water and a dark closet for the price of a 5-star hotel? Okay, we hadn't been born yesterday either.
20 grams for a day? What, for this plank of a bed and a windowless closet? He gave me a frightened look.
15.
10, I said, pinning him down with my glare. And as for your elixir, I'm not entirely sure it helped me. I have a funny feeling it's fake.
Excuse me!
Tartar exploded in such sincere indignation that for a moment I feared he might have a heart attack.
I'm one of the best alchemists
in the whole of Purgatory. He paused, hesitant.
No, in Veerhort.
All I want to say is that your elixir isn't worth 30 grams, I said conciliatorily.
20 sounds more like it. Very well. 50 grams in total.
Your bargaining skill has increased to level 3. I nodded my goodbye to Bretta, then handed the money over to Tartar, who very nearly danced for joy. Were things really so bad here trade-wise? Supported by Lytius, I stumbled toward the exit with all the speed of a tortoise fresh out of the surgery room. Lytius opened the front door and helped me through it. I took in a lungful of fresh air and looked up at the patch of the clear sky above, just visible through the hole in the mountain's sawn-off summit.
What do we do now? Where do you want to go?
We're going to rescue the others now. Where do I want to go? Well, for starters, it might not be a bad idea to pay the local governor a social visit.
Chapter 2. Russians like to joke that if you wake up and nothing's hurting, it means you're dead. So even if I had any reservations about the legitimacy of my post-resurrection existence, now they were completely dispelled. I was well and truly alive, because a body just can't hurt so much in the afterlife. All my limbs were aching like I'd just recovered from a long bout of fever. A nagging pain filled my freshly decorated belly. My head was the only piece of good news. It was perfectly light and clear. I can't overestimate the benefits of dying for the purpose of clearing your mind and reloading your life. Highly recommended. Provided you're in possession of Xavier's avatar, of course. Otherwise the consequences might not be quite so rosy. And still, despite all my aches and pains, I somehow managed to hobble along, all on my own, without Lytius' help. My body must have gradually realized that shirking wasn't an option, and started to turn on. For instance, all of a sudden I felt terribly hungry. As if to please, a wonderful smell of roasting wafted over the community. Some pork or bacon and potatoes. It took all of my willpower to walk past the tavern without choking on my own saliva. First, we had to find out what was really going on with both Arts and Trorg. The local governor lived in by far the biggest and weirdest house in the entire community, which really stood apart from all the other buildings. Not a house even, but rather a small palace or a really big mansion. Also, it seemed to be completely cut into a cliff, which made it a natural continuation of the mountain. The wooden window frames couldn't open, apparently made to last forever, glazed not with glass, but with murky sheets of mica. I bet they'd let very little light inside. They must have hired a mason to decorate the stonework, but he hadn't done a very good job of it, I'm afraid. All the fancy carvings could have been better done by a preschooler.
"This is limestone," Lytius offered, thinking that I was trying to guess the type of stone. "Very similar to what you've got in Cesspit. Purgatory is actually very similar to your world."
"With the exception of giant praying mantises and tiger goats." The beast man shrugged. I took another look at the two-story building, fashioned out of the mountain. The upstairs lights were on, meaning that the owner was at home. No guards were posted outside. I walked over and knocked hard and loud on the wooden door, distressed by the weathering of time. I had to wait for quite a while. Still, I showed no impatience. I could hear some activity within. Eventually, the door was answered. By whom? By my old friend, Rock. No, not the actor, neither the wrestler. It was one of the local players who'd been chasing after Arts and myself the last time we'd been in Veerhort. One of the governor's goons. Luckily, he didn't recognize me. He looked me over.
"What do you want?"
he asked gruffly.
"I need to see the governor."
"He's not seeing anyone. Come back tomorrow. Or the day after."
"I can't. It's urgent, I'm afraid. I've come to claim my reward for some arachnaids I killed."
"Ah, that," he drawled with obvious disappointment. "Wait here."
He disappeared inside and reappeared after a few minutes. This time he swung the door wide open and nodded, motioning me inside. He cast an unwelcoming glance at Lytius, but didn't say anything. The governor's house was really something else. His idea of interior design was as kitsch as they come, if you know what I mean. Greasy fake Baroque armchairs edged with fringes and frilly fabrics. Filthy curtains that must have been silk once. Hardwood floors worn out in the areas of frequent passage, flaking gilded chandeliers and fancy candlesticks. Just as I thought, the place was almost dark because of the lack of natural light. Despite the owner's attempts to pull the wool over his visitor's eyes, the result was completely the opposite. The place looked shabby and could only raise a feeling of pity and revulsion. Judging by the noise, the life and soul of the house was to be found in the far room. That's where Rock took us. The sight which met me was anything but what you'd expect from an audience hall. If you disregarded the gaudy setting, it looked more like a cheap bar, judging by the state of the crowd. Four men who'd have been better suited playing gangsters in a cheap TV series were sitting at a long table, drinking, eating, or rather stuffing their faces with their hands, and shouting. The house owner himself was sprawled across a high wooden armchair at the head of the table, with his feet up.
Question marks. Swashbuckler. Question marks. Question marks.
You could compare the effect of our arrival with that of two clueless European tourists in Harlem. All conversation ceased. Every jaw in the room stopped munching. Curiously, Lytius got the lion's share of the attention, if you'll excuse the pun. To my relief, the governor was the first to break the awkward silence.
"I've been told you've sorted out the arachnaids. We'd have done it ourselves, but we got too much on our plate running this place."
I bit my tongue, not to say anything I might later regret. Apparently, his idea of running the local community...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?